What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
Taking you up to 6:30 on a Monday night football game night on The Fan. Grant Paulson, Danny Rouye with you. I am at Northwest Stadium where the marching band is on the field right now between the 10 and the 40-yard line, warming up for the festivities this evening. Danny is back in our Half Street studios. It is time for our Beltway Blitz. We'll cover the Commanders and the Nationals this segment. Let's get it started. J.P. Flame of the Sports Junkie, so you hear from 6 to 10 a.m. right here on The Fan every single morning. J.P., little birdie's been chirping in my ear that you will be here at Northwest Stadium tonight, huh?
I will. My oldest daughter, who is a huge Commanders fan who lives in L.A., is in town, so we have a chance to go see a Monday night meaningless matchup, but we're looking forward to going out to FedEx, despite what I hear about traffic.
What do you care about tonight in terms of players on field, things you're looking for, et cetera?
I think I just want to see when Jaden's on the field, assuming he's on the field with the first teamers, an offense that resembles what we saw during the playoffs. Obviously, you're not going to have Terry McLaurin, and some guys may not be on the field that will be there in week one. But I want to see a smooth running operation.
JP, we found out over the weekend yesterday the team shopping Brian Robinson. What's your level of surprise in that? And then how about the update today that mutually he and the club have decided he won't play tonight, which certainly feels like this thing's going to end with him not on the team one way or the other.
Wow, I didn't know that update, so thanks for giving me that one. But a little bit of a surprise. I mean, we started hearing some whispers that they weren't happy with him. Here's the thing. If you're not Brian Robinson, you don't really have anybody who's proven. Austin Eckler's the guy who was concussed twice last season. We know he's not an every down back. While we like what we've seen from Chris Rodriguez the last couple seasons, it's been very, very limited. Bill, great story, but again, unproven. Last year in particular, the first half of the season, Brian Robinson Jr. was pretty good. He had 6 touchdowns in the first 8 games. And he averaged about 4.3 yards per carry throughout the season. So it's something that's a little surprising because there's proven production there.
JP, what did you make of the team activating McLaurin off PUP?
I didn't make much of it. You know, it's funny. I was driving around over the weekend listening to some of the weekend hosts who do a great job, from AWOD to Linnell, and they were making a big deal of it. Maybe you guys are making a big deal of it. To me, it almost is like an administrative move. To me, it didn't mean, hey, McLaurin's going to be practicing with this team on Tuesday or Wednesday. But maybe something will happen, but I don't have these great expectations that they will.
Do you think the offense can still be really good without McLaurin operating on all cylinders to begin the season? Is Jaden Daniels that type of elevator, in your opinion, of the guys around him?
All right, you used the word could. Could it? Yes. Josh Allen, remember last year before the season, everybody was saying the Bills were going to take a step back. They lost Stephon Diggs. They lost a bunch of players. When you have that quarterback, and Josh Allen obviously more experienced than Jaden Daniels, and he won the MVP last year, they can elevate players around him. Last year, De'Ami Brown was elevated, right? OZ, Olamide Zaccheaus, was elevated. So could it happen? Yes. Obviously, Terry McLaurin would be a huge help.
Offensive line-wise, how good is this group going to be when they are fully assembled? 3 guys are not playing tonight. Obviously, one Sam Cosby we're not going to see for a while, but no Coleman, no Tunsil. How confident are you that kind of their offseason upgrades, a place that clearly priority, is going to pay dividends?
Pretty comfortable. Are you guys? I mean, the offensive line wasn't horrific last year, if you remember. Now, having Jaden Daniels scramble around obviously is a help, but just on paper, when you just add, if they simply added Tunsil and don't even worry about drafting Connerly, it should be an improved offensive line. Don't you guys think?
I definitely do. I think ultimately it's going to be one of the strengths of the team. If Connerly's at right tackle, Cosme's back at guard, Biotis at center, then you have Coleman at left guard, and Tunsil at left tackle. But on a night like tonight where Jaden's going out there, I wouldn't think for more than a drive or two. No Tunsil, no Coleman, and no Cosme. It's just a different look. So I was telling Danny, like week one against the Giants against a really good pass rush, I actually don't love how they're going to look or the matchup. But I think by the end of the year, as they come together and gel, I think it's actually going to be a really good group.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be interesting to see, too, you know, when we talked about Brian Robinson in the beginning of this conversation, how is the offensive line going to improve? We always think about pass blocking, but how is it going to improve the running game? Maybe they are going to open up more holes for whoever's back there as the primary back for the Commanders.
JP, Zach Ertz was remarkably healthy last year. I say that because his track record over the recent seasons was that he misses a lot of time and is banged up. I expected that to happen last year. It didn't, to his credit, and he was awesome. I'm not expecting a repeat, though, this season. How comfortable with Ben Sinnott in that tight end room are you after Zach Ertz?
Not that comfortable. I mean, what have we seen from Ben Sinnott? We haven't seen anything, right? Bates has been primarily a blocker and, you know, dropped some passes at times. So not super comfortable. I don't like to bet on injuries, but you're right. That was the rap going in. He's an older guy who missed some games, but last year he had a great season health-wise, and maybe that's going to happen again.
JP, thank you, buddy. We appreciate you. Hopefully I bump into you out here somewhere tonight. Enjoy yourself.
All right, sounds good.
Be good. Let's keep the blitz moving. This will be the first time I've ever talked about the Nationals with a marching band behind me, but let's make history here on the Beltway Blitz. Bobby Blanco of MassinSports.com to help us do just that. Bobby, I don't care about the split with the Phillies. The results of games at this point don't matter that much. The first three of the four, really the entire series, the Nats hung around with a World Series caliber club and competed, which I loved. But how about Cade Cavalli on Saturday? Seven shutout. He was incredible.
Yeah, I think it was an encouraging weekend. I know, like you said, like the results don't necessarily matter at this point, but I think splitting four games against a first-place club and a playoff club is important for these guys. And Miguel Cairo mentioned it on Thursday night when they came back and won that game 3-2, the opener, and was like, hey, it felt like a playoff atmosphere. Like, this is a good experience for our young guys. So, yes, while I think the day-to-day results don't necessarily matter that much down the stretch, I do think like getting this experience, playing tough games. I mean, they play a lot of playoff games coming up in the next like week and a half. So, you know, they're going to get a chance to do more. And, yeah, Cade was obviously a huge bright spot over the weekend. I mean, what an outing for him. A real, real tough challenge in that Phillies lineup. A lot of power hitters, obviously a lot of lefty hitters. And he handled them pretty much with ease. Seven shutout innings, five strikeouts, no walks, I think is huge for him. Not issuing any free passes, only seven hits throughout those seven frames. So, yeah, he was really solid. And every start for him, he gets more and more encouraging. He gets deeper into the game. His stuff looks really good. I mean, if he has a strong finish to the season, I think we have the right to be very excited for what his 2026 could look like.
Bobby, turn then in the opposite direction here. Mitchell Parker, I'm making that Michael Scott cringe gif right now, looking at some of his trend lines and numbers. An ERA in excess of 12 in three August starts, only managed an inning and two-thirds. I know Philadelphia is good, but man, oh man, it's non-competitive at this point with Mitchell Parker. A pretty violent regression. What are you seeing?
Yeah, it's just tough. And, you know, it feels like he has one bad inning each time out. And, you know, obviously yesterday's start, Miguel Cairo not, you know, having a very long leash with him, pulled him in the second inning after giving up six runs and just recording five outs. It's been tough. And it feels like it's always like the first or second inning. And, you know, if you get out of the first inning, okay, then you're still thinking like, all right, well, you know, is it going to be the second frame this time around that's going to kind of blow up in his face? He's not been able to. He's really struggling against pretty much everybody, and it's been kind of a theme for most of this year. You know, we saw him not have to deal with too much adversity last year during his rookie year, and when he did, he handled it well. It just feels like things are snowballing him right now, and like he almost like is already thinking about how things could go wrong, and then once they do, it kind of really gets out of control. So I'm not sure what the Nationals can do any differently with him. Obviously, they got to figure it out, and hopefully he can put together a couple of final good encouraging starts going into the offseason.
Bobby, thank you, buddy. We appreciate you.
Yeah, guys. Thanks for having me.
See you, bud.
Be good. You got it. We'll get back to the Commanders with Michael Phillips in a second, but Darius, give me an NFL sounder really quickly. I want to hit football for a moment. Danny, the Browns named Joe Flacco their starting quarterback today. This was expected. My question is, how long does he hold off the kids? Dylan Gabriel flashed. He did some really good things in the preseason game over the weekend. He and Shador Sanders have both now excelled when they've gotten an opportunity. I know Shador's hurt, but that feels like he's keeping a seat warm until they can get one of those kids on the field for a bad team.
That is precisely what is happening there. For me, it's a month, you know, or less. It's a matter of weeks, you know, a handful of games here and there as the team gets off to a, you know, a 0-4, a 1-3 start, maybe. Maybe they surprise somebody. But yeah, I mean, that's why you employ Joe Flacco at this stage. I mean, he's bounced around to multiple teams, multiple orgs to do this at this stage of his career, kind of paced Ravens. When he was, you know, led a team to a Super Bowl, has not been that guy in some time. He's this guy. He's the Case Keenum tier now. It's now can be renamed the Joe Flacco tier.
Other quarterback news, Matthew Stafford did do a workout with the team today. There was this weird veiled answer from McVay and the staff over what he got done on Saturday, and we had to wait until today to get more information. I'm telling you, there's something not right about how they're reporting this whole back thing to the media. I understand that they're giving the information they have, but I just think it's lingering. I don't think they know a lot right now. Stafford is the difference between them being a Super Bowl caliber team and them maybe missing the playoffs, and their inability to get him on the field consistently right now has me going from picking them to win the West to now rolling with San Francisco going into the season. I don't have a good feel about this.
I do not either. And what's interesting is, you know, for everyone that's trying to say, okay, he got on the field, what about what's happened so far leads you to believe he could do the rigors of an NFL season week to week, day to day, game to game, right, practice to practice, let alone a Sunday to a Thursday, because everyone plays on short rest at least once, with the travel and everything going in between? Like, alarm bells should be going off maybe way more than they are.
17 games, 18 weeks, man. 37 years old or whatever, with, yeah, a back that is hooked up to weird wiring after he throws once and can't practice for 3 days in August. I just cannot trust him to go the distance. It's almost like, you know, your phone is on 2% to start the day. It's like, I don't think I'm going to be able to get through the whole day.
I'm not going to make it
on this thing. Let's keep the blitz moving. Odyssey Richmond in the Richmonder is where you can find the work of our buddy Michael Phillips. Philly, I am sitting in the press box right now at Northwest Stadium. Bengals Commanders tonight, Monday Night Football. I feel like I'm 12 again. I don't know what to do with my arms. I'm fired up, man. A little rain falling. Let's play football.
This is the most excited people have been for a preseason game in a while. I think it helps that there's been all that noise around the Bengals. We're taking this seriously. We're going all in for a fast start this season. That gives it the juice, right? You're going to have an actual ones versus ones competition tonight. I feel a little bad. I didn't brave the traffic today. I am, however, all in for week one. We'll be sitting next to each other when they play against the Giants.
What do you care about tonight? What are you looking for? Player you're highlighting? Whatever. Just give me what's on the docket.
Give me some Marshawn Lattimore right there. I just think if this goes well, it fixes all your other problems. With Amos, you've got a guy who I think you can install as the number two, and that works well moving down the line. He can be the number two. He can grow. He can develop. Sanders still moves back to his inside position. That's natural for him. Igbinoghene is your backup. He's very good in that role. If it doesn't work, and it's not, I'm not saying Marshawn Lattimore has to completely denied Ja'Marr Chase tonight. He's a great receiver. But what we saw against those great receivers last year was that he melted down. You remember the temper tantrum in the end zone. You remember what happened. You know, Philly and Tampa come to mind there. That can't happen. And if that does happen, if there are those warning signs and he does look still a step slow, now you can't move Amos to one. Maybe you have to bring Sanders still outside. That takes Noah Igbinoghene inside. It's a mess if it doesn't work. I think there's a lot riding on Marshawn Lattimore playing well tonight.
Brian Robinson shopped over the weekend, we found out. Trade candidate. Now he's not playing tonight, and it's mutual. What does that tell you?
I think he's gone. Rarely do we see this story, and it's not the first step, and he's gone. It tells me that they don't see a difference between B-Rod and C-Rod is what it tells me, that they think those are interchangeable. I get that there's a ton of hype around Bill, right? There's Bill hype out the wazoo in Washington right now. I get that. But I think this is more about they don't see any advantage to keeping him on short yardage over letting Chris Rodriguez do that dirty work. They were impressed with him last year. There's a million reasons this went wrong. He's previous regime, right? You start with that. I don't think he fits the Cliff Kingsbury system. You can go there. Final year of the contract. He's not going to be a piece in the future. But still kind of jarring for fans because he's a guy we rooted for a few years, and he's got that great story. Tough to see it end abruptly like this in the lead up to Monday Night Football.
Was the McLaurin removal from Pup mutual, or was it like when I got dumped and I had to say it was mutual to try to save face? Was this the team escalating, or was this everybody singing kumbaya about this football season, Miguel?
I'm worried at how little everybody's worried, Danny. I was talking with somebody the other day who's an agent who's dealt with Adam Peters before. He said all this talk of everybody's like, Adam Peters, you know, $28 million, they're just going to meet in the middle. Is Adam Peters isn't necessarily meet in the middle kind of guy. And I interpreted this as a, let's get back to work. Let's play some football. That was fun. We had our talking time. You signed your autograph. Time to get back to work playing football. I'm a little worried about how this escalates. And I do think this is not a positive sign necessarily.
Michael Phillips, Odyssey Richmond, and the Richmonder. Jaden Daniels going to play tonight, which is going to be fun for people. But no Laremy Tunsil, no Brandon Coleman on the left side, no Sam Cosmi on the right side, and no Zach Ertz, his number one target. I'm thinking this is a series and out, but are you surprised at all they are going to play him with so many of his key pieces not out there with him?
No Terry, no Noah Brown. Yeah, you run down the list. You got a lot of, I mean, you don't want to risk Austin Eckler either, given his injury history. I'm not surprised they're playing him. I think everybody wants to see one positive series out of these guys. The question is what happens if you don't get it. The best case scenario here is they come out, Cliff draws up a couple winners, they throw a touchdown pass on the first series, maybe Jaden runs for 15 yards at one point. Everybody feels great. The operation's fine. We can quit freaking out over what we've seen on the practice field. That's just the practice field. They're ready to play the Giants. If it doesn't work that way, that's when the tough decisions start tonight. Do you try it again with a second series, third series? You don't want to play, you know, roulette with your quarterback here. That's way too important. But I also think we've gone a whole offseason here without seeing one positive drive from the first team offense in any of these joint practices, intra-squad scrimmages, any of that. That's an issue. And I think Cliff Kingsbury kind of acknowledged in his comments the other day, we've got some work to do. I think he wants to see that work done on the field tonight.
Give me a young player or two that you're excited to watch take on the Bengals this evening.
Man, it is time for Ben Sinnott to take that step forward. And I think this is a great avenue for him to do it, a great night for him to do it against the Bengals with Terry out, with Noah out, with Zach Ertz out. We need to see something that says, yeah, I can be the future of the franchise at this position. Yeah, I can make that second year leap forward. I don't know if we're going to get it or not. That's my guy, though.
Michael, thank you, buddy. Good catching up.
Enjoy the game. Stay dry. We will chat soon, I'm sure.
It is raining right now, more of a mist, but that hasn't stopped pregame warm-ups for the band, for the cheerleaders, and doesn't seem like it's wet enough on the field right now for any kind of issues. I mean, if it was really raining, they'd have the tarp out, and they don't, Danny. The field looks great, and I think they're anticipating this to just kind of be more of the mist machine than any kind of rain that actually affects the ball game. But let's get into what is a developing significant story here. Brian Robinson not going to play tonight. Maybe the end of the road with the Commanders, we'll explain next.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
Back live on Grant and Danny and welcoming you back to Northwest Stadium where I'm hanging out on this Monday evening. Monday Night Football tonight with the Bengals. The developing huge story is what is going on the Brian Robinson front. Jordan Schultz of Fox Sports announcing yesterday via his social accounts that he'd heard from league sources that Robinson was being shopped by Washington. And while that wasn't stunning, today's news might be to a lot of people, which was that mutually he and the team have decided that he's not going to play today while the team sorts out his future. And that was Mike Garofalo of NFL Media. So what does this mean, Danny? Essentially, the team is making calls trying to trade him, and while they do that, they and Robinson both think it's best that he doesn't play. I take that to mean they don't want him to get hurt so they could trade him. Yeah. Robinson doesn't think it's worth playing for a team where he hasn't locked in a roster spot. How can we possibly take that today other than that his days are numbered and we've probably seen him play his final Commanders?
I'm looking for another explanation. I can't find one. Seriously, if this was just a rumor, okay, that, hey, he's falling down the pecking order and they might seek a trade, you still might see him play tonight. Right? Trying to solidify, trying to climb back up those rankings, trying to make sure that everyone knows he's better than Demetric Felton or Chris Rodriguez or whoever you want to list. This basically says the nail is in the coffin. You're done here, right? And we both agree to that, and that's kind of all she wrote. If we can't trade you, we'll just cut you. That's what it feels like to me. Again, maybe there's some other element of it that I haven't considered or something at the 11th hour could change that, but that's how I'm viewing this.
Year four of his rookie deal. This is the fourth, the final season for Brian Robinson that he's going into. I just looked up some of the advanced numbers for him because I think everybody knows with the eyeballs when you watch, there isn't the explosiveness that you want at the running back position. There aren't home runs or extra base hits, as I call them. It is a lot of singles. But maybe, you know, he gets more than is there. Maybe it's a blocking issue, right? When you actually dive into the next-gen stats from last season, would you perceive that Brian Robinson faces eight-man boxes a lot as a big physical thumper is running downhill?
Anecdotally, I would say, you know, nowhere, not like noticeably more. It felt average to me. I mean, Warren Sharp said he had the fifth easiest run defense schedule last year in the NFL and then produced lackluster numbers at best. So instinctively, I wouldn't say that he faced an inordinate number of eight-man boxes, but I could be wrong.
So the reason I would think sometimes a guy like him would have a higher percentage is when you look at the players who have the highest percentage of their runs against eight-man boxes in the league, it's a lot of times it's battering ram, goal line, short yardage guys. So like Gus Edwards last year is an example, or you know players like that that are brought in and you sound the horn that they're about to get the ball and everybody knows it for the pushing match, right? I say that, though, to say that when you look at the numbers, and I think this is the Jaden Daniels effect where you're petrified of him and you've got to keep guys for him to possibly keep the football on nakeds and boots. Out of 90 qualified running backs, Brian Robinson was 41st in terms of the percentage of eight-man boxes he got last year. 41st! Mm. 40 guys more often than him as a percentage of their carry workload ran into eight-man boxes. So that should have boded very, very well for him. And yet and still, when you look at the numbers, he averaged about 4 yards per carry, which 3 years into his career is what he's been. He ranks 24th among NFL starters in rushing yards over attempt, expected per attempt, which is basically the metric that suggests, Danny, this is what you should get based on the chip data of where everybody is, and this is what you actually get. So if you have a plus number, you got more than the run was designed for and the blocking should have allowed for. If it's a minus number, then you got less than was there. He was 35th in terms of the percentage of his yards last year that were earned over expected. 35th. So, I mean, the metrics, the analytics, the deep dive stuff for the R&D department, which is growing with Washington, is not good. When they look up some of those numbers and they see the DVOA last year for Chris Rodriguez and Austin Eckler, and Jeremy McNichols were all considerably better in the positives, 15% or higher, and he was at minus 4%. There's just not that many numbers, if you're doing it that way via the data, that are going to sing a positive song about him last year.
Yeah, even beyond that, 34% of his rushes went for one or fewer yards. I think he was, for more in sharp, 20th in stuff rate. So that kind of, you know, bears out when you watch. There's too many of those. I think of the New Orleans game as is kind of the classic what I think of with Brian Robinson. There were exceptions. The Titans game where everybody ran for 100 yards, where he's running untouched, you know, for 30, 40, 50. The freaky game against the Giants where he ran into a pile and everyone forgot about him and he emerged with a long carry. But for the most part, I think of that You throw him in the line of scrimmage for zero. And now we're doing second and 10. Jaden Daniels, please save us. Right? I mean, that's kind of what it was in that game specifically. It's not fair to judge him on one, but to me, that's kind of the microcosm of what I'm talking about. It tells you a huge percentage of his carries went for nothing. And to me, the hallmark of Brian Robinson when it was right, and some of the yards per carry numbers are never going to be great with him, but it was what I always felt about Alfred Morris or some of these other guys. When it should go for one, he's dragging a guy kicking and screaming for 2.5 and almost three. Right? Now, the trade-off there is he's not breaking a homer. He's not making seven guys miss and spinning off contact and making the safety miss 25 yards down the field. Just not who he is. But when there's only one there, he's getting you three. And that wasn't the case last year, despite the slight improvement in his part on yards per carry. So to me, this is just not where the league is right now in terms of what you're looking for in a running back. Can you pass pro? Are you excellent out of the backfield? Are you a threat to break one? Do you have wiggle? Do you have the cutback? Do you have the one and go? It's just kind of a different style from a different time. He is a plotting thumper that has now been forced to line up out of the shotgun for the most part. He's probably
I want to go into those numbers too.
Yeah, he's better in an I formation, I would say.
Well, you would imagine. So I looked up some of these numbers. He averaged 0.6 more yards per carry, so well over a half yard per carry last year, better when they ran from under center with him as a deep back than out of the shotgun. Now, his shotgun numbers were not worse than his season totals, but that stands to reason because the vast majority of his work was that way, so that's probably going to be about your season average, which it was, 4.1. But when they gave him the rare carry from under center, he was actually up closer to 5 yards per carry. I actually think there is a path to him being a super helpful running back somewhere. I really do believe that. I don't view him as a 20-carry-a-game workhorse for a Super Bowl-caliber team, but I think there are fits. There are teams that could bring him in. I think the idea of shopping him actually makes sense because if you want a bit of a workhorse, a guy that could solve the game away with 13, 15 carries in the second half, that gets better with those touches and is a big physical guy that leans on people and is hard to tackle because of how strong he is between the tackles, I think there's a spot for him. I just don't love him as a fit here. This is not the regime that drafted him. This is not the offense that they envisioned him in when they took him. It's very different than what Ron Rivera and Scott Turner were running. If you look at, as another example, RPOs versus non-RPOs. He was better on non-RPOs last year than the run-pass option stuff that they did. All of those little metrics add up to me to go, if I'm Cliff Kingsbury, am I better off when he's on the field than when Merritt is? No, I don't think so. We still have to see him prove it, and he'll get a chance against the starting defense maybe to get some work tonight, put an exclamation point on their view of him. But I've said this since last year. When Chris Rodriguez comes out onto the field, who is a sixth-round pick, who they cut at the end of training camp last year, who may or may not make the team this year, I don't think you fall off at all from Brian Robinson. I would actually make the case, based on the numbers, that you get better. But if you want to tell me Robinson's better, that's fine. He got drafted 3 rounds earlier. He's gotten a lot more carries from multiple coaching staffs. You cannot convince me that he's significantly better than Chris Rodriguez, and that's a big problem.
It certainly is if you're Brian Robinson or part of his camp. Yeah, I mean, I said this, it just feels like I'm piling on the guy, but I said it when he was drafted a handful of years ago, even after his promising rookie year. And again, what he endured and went through is incredible. It's absurd that it happened, that he was shot in the leg and then, had a football season after that. Just insane. But it's just not the style that I'm into. And it's certainly not the style that fits this regime, the way Cliff Kingsbury's offense is spread you out, everything's quick hitting, it's, get guys in space, etc. There are 7, 8, 9, 10, 12 guys I'd rather have in space with the football in their hands than him. So that's kind of what would govern it for me. Now, I wouldn't just move on from him because, again, I think you said it, there is a place. I'm going to line up under center here and there. I'm going to have a third and one, and I wouldn't mind having that guy thump a couple times. But if he's not into the spirit of it, in other words, if he's going to take it as a demotion and be tough to be around and kind of bring my vibe down, then I suppose we can move on because I've got Chris Rodriguez to do that, to your point. But it is, to me, I'm way more surprised than you, it seems like. I don't want to put words in your mouth. I thought we were going to do the Brian Robinson thing this year. And I thought that until, I read the initial report today that they were, or whenever it was, that they were looking to shop him. I'm really, really, really surprised that we've gotten to this point. Again, based on their off-field or off-season actions in terms of how they addressed the position or didn't really, and B, by the fact that all it took was a nice showing here for a couple of months from, it looks like, a seventh rounder and the rest of the guys that they've accumulated that don't have huge, excellent resumes in the NFL for being bell cows to look like they're going to move on from a guy that led the team in carries last year?
Yeah, I guess for me, the reason I'm not that surprised, I mean, I would have bet on him leading them in carries as recently as Friday. I mean, I'm not acting like I thought they were going to cut him or trade him necessarily, but if you were to have told me Friday afternoon they're going to do that, it would not have really stunned me. This is not them moving on from Laremy Tunsil or Terry McLaurin, or you know what I mean?
Yeah.
The running back position, I just view it, when you don't have a star like a Saquon Barkley or a Bijan Robinson from Atlanta, then it's kind of moving furniture around in a lot of ways. And the way they do it especially, I look at this as a number of carries that need to be divvied up. Think about it like a workload.
Yep.
Hours at the office that need to be handled by a number of people on your team, so to speak. They have, on any given day, somewhere between 13 on a low end and like 23 on a high end carries for their running back position in most games, or just carries in general that might be necessary. There's going to be games where Jaden Daniels runs 15 times. Like, we saw that multiple times last year. He runs a lot. So the import of this running back carry thing goes down a little bit for them in their situation. Now you have Deebo Samuel, who will occasionally line up in the backfield, who more than any receiver in the league has some running back ability. So now the importance of your running back goes down a little bit as well. When you look at it, look at his average per game last year. If it's around a dozen to 15 carries, whether it's him or someone that's more explosive like Merritt, I guess my point is it's not that big of a deal for them to make a change here. Like, for them to stick their neck out there and make a big move would be if they did something with a Marshawn Lattimore or a Daron Payne or some critical player making a ton of money. Mm-hmm. Robinson on his rookie contract makes next to nothing, is not their guy, and it's a position where week to week you could just find a dude. Like, Timmy Smith went for two Bills in a Super Bowl that one time. Yeah. You know what I mean?
I do know exactly what you mean. And it looks like that's the plan. It's not a lot of marquee names just yet, but there's depth there. And, Eckler's going to have his role of, he was on pace for probably about 100 carries overall. Obviously, a number of injuries, and they're scary ones, so I'm not diminishing those. But you would think you would keep him around that same number. You'd probably have Daniels in the 120, 125 carry. He went for 148 last year, right? Just what you'd budget for, both via scrambles and the occasional design thing. So of your 500 runs and change, you've already basically taken half of them off the board. So you don't need Billy the Bell Cow when you've got, Akroski Merritt, you've got McNichols, you've got Rodriguez. Those guys, two of those three guys, you could probably get to the practice squad a couple times and have them active certain days, game days, et cetera, as people get banged up. So you're going to do this committee, a true committee, I think, for the running back spot, at least for a while.
It's too early to say this with any conviction because I've just been at practices and seen him and then in the one preseason game. But here's the other part, and I don't like kicking a guy while he's down here in B-Rob. I happen to think Ja'Cory Kroski-Merritt is an upgrade anyway, probably. I mean, that's just where I'm at on Robinson as a back. And so I've been clamoring for speed and twitch and burst and wiggle and explosiveness, I guess, to sum it all up. And Merritt's got that more in spades than Robinson can give you. And so it's addition by subtraction, essentially, if they go that route for me. Now, I don't know about Merritt's durability, who's missed some time this past week with a shoulder after really 1 week with where he got some first-team workload. I can't guarantee you he can stay healthy all year. I think there's still major questions to answer in the running back room, but I think they're making the right decision if they move Robinson, or even if they end up releasing him. I think they've got enough depth that I'm not concerned about it. But let's get into what a workload could look like for Merritt as a rookie, and maybe even as well how they would divvy up carries. Would it be Rodriguez or McNichols, the other guy in that makes the team? What do we think this running back scenario unfolds as if Brian Robinson is out? You can weigh in if you'd like, 800-636-1067. If you make your way to the stadium tonight and want to hop on the phone, that is cool with us. We got Joel Corey, who's a contracts expert, coming up in about 20 minutes to talk about the Terry McLaurin stare down. This is Grant and Danny on a game night on The Fan.
We'll be right back. What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report. He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
Rhythm for Daniels. Robinson on second and one. He's got the first down and more at the 20, 10, 5, touchdown! Brian Robinson!
Next hour, we're going to give you the Commanders players we're most excited to see take the field tonight. One of them's going to have to be Ja'Cory Krosky-Merritt. With Brian Robinson not going, he might get a chance to get some first-team reps with Jaden Daniels. Now it's going to be behind three backup offensive linemen, a makeshift front for him. And it's not going to be the unit he's going to be playing behind in week one of the season. But I remember when I covered the 2012 Redskins with Mike Shanahan, and the talk that year in camp was a running back in Alfred Morris, who was a late-round pick like Merritt. And as a sixth-rounder from Florida Atlantic, he was drafted after playing in the Senior Bowl as a fullback with the Shanahan coaching staff. And I remember, Danny, everybody thinking, I don't see why this guy couldn't get carries. And within 2 weeks of the regular season, we still kind of felt that way, but you hadn't really seen him prove it yet. There was a preseason game on a night like tonight against the Bears in the dress rehearsal. First carry, ran over a run-stuffing starting linebacker, broke a tackle, ripped off a 12-yard run or whatever. He averaged like six in his limited work in the game, and at the end of the night, you felt like he might have just become their starter. And I feel like tonight could be that night for Ja'Cory Krosky-Merritt.
Well, before then, just in the Wayback Machine with Alfred Morris, you were the beat reporter at that point, and you got him on the phone with Holden Kushner and I, and he was still listed as a fullback. This was still very preliminary in the process. And we were going, hey, man, looks like he got a shot to make the team. There's good buzz around the camp before he ran for 1,600 yards. Just seems so funny in retrospect. Like these, you know, these massive things can have such teeny tiny beginnings. You don't know if they've unearthed the bell cow. You also don't know if they've unearthed a guy that's going to be part of the rotation and fine and, you know, who cares? I mean, I remember, you know, multiple times over where Adrian Peterson was giving way to Antonio Gibson and we're going, do they have something special here? It turns out it was fine, right? But, you know, the promise of the unknown, especially at that spot, is always so intoxicating to us. But I can't wait to see a bigger sample against some first-teamers tonight.
Well, I just got a tweet from someone who says, you know, maybe I'm in the minority, his point was, but an old guy in Eckler with an unproven seventh-round pick in Merritt and a journeyman in McNichols and a sixth-round pick who hadn't done much with like 90 career carries in Rodriguez, that doesn't sound like a great running back room to me. I don't love that for a team that wants to go deep into the playoffs. And my point to him is, so you add in third, you know, Brian Robinson in year four, who averages 4 yards a carry, and it gets a lot better? Whatever you thought of the running back room with Brian Robinson, you can't tell me it gets worse without him necessarily. The only thing that changes is experience level. The only thing that changes is you've been here and you've done it with him, and so you know what to expect, which is, frankly, nothing explosive or all that fun. But right. I guess the floor is higher, too, because he's not going to fumble a whole lot. He is going to be on the field for the most part. He can play through pain. He's proven pretty durable. So I understand if you're saying that the floor gets lower if you get rid of him. That's probably true. But I don't think the ceiling gets lower. I think it probably gets higher, actually. And I'm going to be difficult to convince that the room is worse off.
I mean, I'd rather have a guy with a little bit of a track record. Just if money's not a factor, if we move emotion out of it and any kind of other, you know, human condition.
But don't you need the track record to be good? Like, any track record is worthwhile?
Yeah. It's worth something. Again, it's not worth a lot. As you said, I'm not crying over this. I'm not screaming that they're making a huge mistake. But in terms of the room, there's a slightly lower floor. I think that's fair. In terms of the ceiling, I'm excited about it because, again, my only concern throughout this whole process was I don't care who wins that number one gig, and I put that in quotation marks because I don't know that there is one here or that you really need it. I just can't do the bit where Brian Robinson was on pace, if he played the full 17, to carry the ball 220 times. That was the only thing that I wanted to have happen out of this was that he wasn't the dude, and they were just content to run him right into the line of scrimmage for 0-1 and then have Jaden Daniels bail him out on second and third down. That's the only thing I cared about when it came to this. So if you're replacing him by a committee of average or, you know, a couple guys with upside, et cetera, I'm very into that because with the small samples, we talked about this a bunch, that Rodriguez has had, all he's ever done is thrive. And now with, Jacroski Merritt, now you're going, hey, there may be something special here. So, yeah, I'm totally fine with it.
Clearly, Merritt would be the great beneficiary and the most likely guy to start and be your first and second down back. Eckler might get a little more running back, you know, ball-carrying workload perhaps on earlier downs, I guess, although I think you still have to be careful with him at his age. But the big question I would have is, who makes the team that wouldn't have? Like, if you were going to keep three and it was Robinson, Eckler, Merritt, who's now the guy that's definitively in? McNichols last year played a lot, carried the ball a bunch, and was significant on special teams, was their kick returner. I think they'll probably want a running back to be their kick returner again. I don't know if that would be Eckler. Remember, he ripped off an opening return touchdown to start the season in Landover, Maryland. They got called back in week one last year. But I would think Rodriguez is the most like Brian Robinson. So if that's the case, then Chris Rodriguez might be the guy that replaces him on the roster because you want your third and a foot who's coming into the game more so than McNichols, who might be better on special teams. Rodriguez just being the goal line back might actually be able to get a leg up now.
I that makes sense to me. Like, to me, if I care about types, now they seem to, and that's based on just looking over the last couple of years. I wouldn't care as much about, okay, do I have a bruising running back? Do I have a pass catcher? Do I have a scat back, a third down back, whatever? I would just sort of keep my best group.
Well, I don't think they think of it that way, but they need a guy that will be good in short yardage. That shouldn't be a skill set for Merritt, I wouldn't think. It's certainly not Eckler's skill set. So you would just think a bigger, more physical running back like a Rodriguez.
And it would be Rodriguez.
That's how he made his money. That's what he did in college.
And that's who it would be. Even though Eckler of his career, now not now, I don't want to use him that way, but has had an unbelievable nose for the and one, the goal line, whether it's going over the top or whatever. But again, I'm not using him as much in that way at this stage, given the multiple concussions last year, the injuries, et cetera. So to me, your battering ram, I put that in quotes, is probably Rodriguez, which means you're sneaking McNichols to the practice squad and then activating him when somebody goes down, which at that spot seems inevitable.
Speaking of activating players, the Commanders have taken Terry McLaurin off the PUP list. He still needs a deal. We'll talk about a potential deal with Joel Corey next.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report. He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.